Welcome to Local Talk Wednesday on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in central Iowa. I am your host for today, Susan Franzen, together with my co-host, Gina McAndrews. Welcome, Gina.
Hello, Susan. It's great to be here, and it's great to welcome our listeners. I'm especially happy to be co-hosting because you're talking about the danger of the Leopold Center for Sustainable Agriculture. And I have a long history in agriculture, growing up on a farm here in Iowa and taught in agronomy at Iowa State for 16 years and had the opportunity to work with several folks from the Leopold Center and have got a lot of good friends there. So I saw that you titled your program, Saving the Leopold Center for Sustainable Agriculture. Is that still possible?
Well, I wouldn't have thought so before I was lining up segments for this program, but when I talked with our guest Mark Rasmussen yesterday and heard how former ISU students and ordinary citizens have been petitioning Governor Branstad, I do have some hope, and I'm excited about sharing it with our listeners today.
I'm looking forward to hearing about it, but that's only the first half of the program. Then we have previews of two outstanding events that are taking place on this Saturday, April 29th. A program that should inspire our listeners to become members, or at least to renew their memberships. Is our membership drive still going on, right?
Yes, it is, which means that we still need some new memberships or renewals to claim all of that $15,000 matching grant our most supportive members have contributed. So if you've been thinking about becoming a member, this is really a good time. The basic membership fee is $55 a year or 15 cents a day, and it will be doubled to $110 with our matching grant to help KHOI pay basic expenses.
And also to provide the great local news from people you know, or from people you'd like to know.
Yes.
We're always open to new suggestions for our local stories, too.
Yes, and most of the time we have guests on that people exactly either know or would like to get to know. And sometimes then they have the chance to do whatever they are talking about. Just call 515-292-2878 or at our website, khoifm.org, where you can press the donate button at the top of the page. Or my favorite is when people come into the station to give us a check. Then we can thank you in person. It's especially nice when we get to meet a listener we never knew before.
Well, I'm eager to hear from Mark Rasmussen. He's the director of the Leopold Center for Sustainable Agriculture, and we have the great opportunity to have him here in the studio with us.
Welcome, Mark.
Good morning.
When I talked to you yesterday, I got the impression that this is a pretty momentous day in the 30-year history of the Leopold Center. Can you start out by telling us just what the Leopold Center is and why it is important?
Well, the Leopold Center was started 30 years ago this year, in the middle of the farm crisis in Iowa, when we lost so many farmers. And it was intended to try and help out rural farmers in rural America in Iowa. And our basic mission is to do research on agriculture and help solve problems of agriculture. And we've done that very well over the years. We've given out a lot of grants to support a lot of projects around the state, farmers and other university people, other private colleges in the state. So a lot of things have been done over those years.
Well, in mentioning its origins, you didn't say anything about the Groundwater Protection Act. And I will say something about that because tomorrow on our Heart of Iowa program, we're going to play a historic interview. We got at the 25th anniversary, when we'd just gone on the air, we had an interview with the first director, Dennis Keeney, and with Ralph Rosenberg, who Ralph was involved for years with the legislature in getting that Groundwater Protection Act and implementing it, and the Leopold Center was part of that implementation. And if people listen, they can get that history, which really makes you feel, hey, this was put here for a purpose, and that purpose hasn't gone away.
Yes, that's right. In fact, about 3 weeks ago, before all of this came up, we had a Shivers lecture on Iowa State campus in which we had the three founders, the founding fathers, as we like to call them, David Osterberg and Ralph and Paul Johnson, come and talk about the history and the challenges at the time of working this legislation through, as part of this whole effort, as you say, on the Groundwater Protection Act.
Well, what's become clear in some of the debate is that many people know nothing about the... And let's just start. Where is the Leopold Center?
Well, the Leopold Center is in Curtis Hall on Iowa State campus. It's kind of funny because of its international reputation. Oftentimes we get visitors and they think we have this elaborate center with greenhouse space and research labs and we're just a bunch of cubicles in a corner office in an administration building.
Well, where do you do your research?
Well, we do it primarily through others. We support faculty and students at Iowa State, but also at the University of Iowa, UNI, Drake University, Dort College up in northwest Iowa. We work with NGOs around the state on various projects. So most of what we do through the hands of others.
Well, that must take a lot of money. Where do you get your money?
Well, the original legislation... created a fund from the sale of nitrogen fertilizer in the state, and that has gone up and down depending on the year between $1.5 to $2 million. In recent years, it's been running high because we've had more acres of corn in the state. And my guesstimate, at looking at the numbers, it's about 90% agriculture, but it's also about 10% urban and golf courses because. You know, when you buy fertilizer at Earl May, you know, that's part of the sales of fertilizer in the state. So that's been our primary source of funding. But also we have a secondary budget line in the region's budget, which originally was something like $600,000. But over time, every time the university's gotten cut, that's been sliced a little bit. So at the present time, it's zero. But it was at about just a little under $400,000.
Well, no, my understanding is that the bill that just passed the legislature, which would cut the Leopold Center entirely, where do they get money to cut?
There's two steps to this legislative action this year. One is zeroing out the region's budget line. And it wasn't just us. They did this to other entities at the university. But also then to redirect the nitrogen fund to the Nutrient Research Center at Iowa State. And then, of course, following up on that is specific language to eliminate earlier language with regards to creation of the center. So, you know, that section of the bill is titled Elimination of the Leopold Center for Sustainable Agriculture.
And who's worrying about the groundwater?
Well, that's one of our points. We've been there for a long time. I mean, we like to boast that we were thinking about nutrient management and nitrate in surface water and groundwater long before other people were thinking about it. We were funding practices years ago, 10 years ago, before others were even on board with this kind of an idea. And so it's part of our mission is to look out over the horizon and try and think of things that are coming, you know, from the distance, not just here and now.
I noticed that you have some things with you that you maybe want to say to us. I know you're going on to a TV interview after you leave us, so can you give us a little more preview about what you want to get across before you that might get back to the governor in a positive way?
Yeah, we've been trying to make this point, and we've been urging people to contact the governor's office, and I know for a fact a lot of people have, and they've been keeping a tally down there of how many people have been speaking. But basically our message is that this is a mistake. There's been a lot of misunderstanding in the center, and a lot of this has come out just in the last 2 weeks, just the extent to which people do not understand the Leopold Center. And it's been, in many ways, it's been very frustrating in not being able to get that accurate word to legislators. But again, yeah, we think this is a mistake, that this is an embarrassment to Iowa. When everybody else is now on board moving towards sustainability, for the state of Iowa to be walking back in this very prominent way from sustainability. Heck, you can't pick up an annual report of any corporation in the ag world or in larger business world that doesn't have a sustainability section in it now. People are concerned about their human resources, their natural resources they use, long-term profitability. All of this is wrapped up into the sustainability idea.
And, of course, one of the advantages of having a governor who has been in office for many, many years, he signed the original bill, so he knows what was behind that. It's not something he's heard about in history. I know there was a remark made by Angie Carter, whose clip will be played later, who was talking to legislators. And she said, you have no sense of history. You don't know about they said, what's the Groundwater Protection Act?
Yes.
Well, our governor knows what that is, and
yes.
he knows how hard fought that was. It wasn't easy to get the Leopold Center.
Mark, can you share with us a little bit how the Leopold Center has become a national and international leader in a lot of research in sustainable agriculture and how that our information has been disseminated around the world?
Yeah, I mean, because the Leopold Center was a kind of an early arriver in this area, it kind of had grandfather status. A lot of states have checked with us and even earlier directors, you know, how did you do this? How was it set up? And so there's a lot of people around the country and even in other countries that are trying to do something similar, probably not funded. In fact, just a few weeks ago, I received a call from someone in Arkansas, and they're trying to set up a sustainability movement and how to fund that movement. There's a lot of activity going on, and we get our information out. We've been a very transparent organization. I mean, early on with paper bulletins and newsletters and so forth, but more recently with our website. Everything is up there, the projects that we've funded. We follow up with final reports from those researchers on what they discovered in their research. And I'm going to fight very hard, regardless of how this turns out, to keep that website up and live so that people can still access that information easily. And using Google Analytics, we have found a lot of people downloading things, even still, I mean, from around the world.
I know as an instructor in agronomy and crop production, and I've worked with a lot of professors in other states at land-grant universities as well, and they've used a lot of that information, the research results, in just teaching classes. And I think it's a real important asset to a lot of the young generation that's moving up and moving into agriculture.
Well, and I've been very appreciative of our younger generation in terms of the amount of support that's come out of the woodwork the last couple of weeks since we first found out about this legislative action. You know, I think the intent was to create this at midnight and then kind of rush it through with a whole bunch of other things in the legislature without people being able to respond. But we've had, you mentioned Angie. Angie and other younger supporters around the country jumped onto social media on Twitter and Facebook, and they put out a petition that got over 700 signatures in a short time. The support has just been amazing, and I'm very humbled by all of the activities. I mean, some people literally dropped everything for that week to help out and try and get the word out.
Yeah, I know there's even people acting in Washington, D.C., in the Union of Concerned Scientists and other places that are really trying to offer support and write articles in support of the Leopold Center.
Well, and my wife and I, we've been thinking that we're going to hold a big party this summer for Leopold supporters, regardless of the outcome. And anybody that can get here midsummer to Brookside, we're going to get a shelter and we're going to have a party, regardless of the outcome.
Well, you mentioned some important date with Aldo Leopold before we came in. What was that?
Well, it's kind of an eerie coincidence that last Friday, April 21st, was the anniversary of Aldo Leopold's death. This was pointed out to me when, in the midst of all of this legislative action, that, you know, the Leopold Center could very well die on the very day that Aldo Leopold did. So it's kind of an eerie coincidence.
Is there anything else you want to say before you leave for your next appointment?
Well, I like to also point out a little bit of Iowa State history. If you remember Professor Atanasoff, who invented the computer, and people at the time didn't fully appreciate what he'd accomplished, and it kind of slipped away from the university and went elsewhere to be developed, and only later did they appreciate that. And I kind of think in those terms with regards to the Leopold Center, that sometimes you don't appreciate what you've got until it's gone. To follow up on the 70s Joni Mitchell song, you know.
And there is still time for people to call the governor's office. Just to let everybody know, their number is 515-281-5211. 515-281-5211 if you'd like to call Governor Branstad and help offer support for the Leopold Center.
Yes, and we've had some surprising support. Just yesterday came out in the Des Moines Register, Tom Doerr, who's a big agribusinessman in the state over the years, and he spoke out publicly in support of the center, saying that, you know, it's good to have alternative viewpoints and alternative places to discuss those viewpoints. So we were encouraged by that he made a direct appeal to the governor, too.
I guess there really is hope then, and our listeners need to stay tuned and watch everything, right?
Well, it's not over till it's over.
Well, thank you very much for coming in, Mark. We'll be watching what goes on.
Well, fingers crossed, and thank you for having me.
This is KHOI Community Radio, and we've been listening to Mark Rasmussen, director of the Leopold Center for Sustainable Agriculture, who has a busy day explaining to people who aren't familiar with the center why it's too valuable to lose. Yesterday, I spoke with Angie Carter about the hearing before the Iowa legislature on April 17th. She had some rather harsh things to say about those who argue that the center has completed its work and should be closed, but what's most impressive is the support that Mark mentioned earlier. So,
all right, my name is Angie Carter, and I am a sociology professor at Augustana College living in Davenport, Iowa right now. I graduated from Iowa State University in 2015 with a PhD in sociology and sustainable agriculture and received some funding from the Leopold Center for some projects that I did following up on my dissertation research, studying women farmland owners and conservation to improve water quality. I also, as a student in the Sustainable Ag Program, benefited from the Leopold Center's speakers and the community that they created on campus, the mentorship that was offered through that program. It was just a great hub on campus to have as a student. And so when some of my friends from my cohort and I learned about these proposed cuts just a couple of days before the hearing on the 17th, we acted pretty fast, and we were located across four time zones now. We've got, you know, I'm still here in Iowa, but I have a friend in D.C. and a friend in Oakland, a friend in Corvallis, and we're connecting with some current students who are still at Ames at Iowa State right now. And so we put up a petition as soon as we learned about these cuts. We created a website, iowasustainableag.com, so that we would have a place to post alerts and updates about the cuts, and just started working really fast, kind of by the seat of our pants, because we're all working other full-time jobs now, teaching or in nonprofits or in research, trying to learn all we could about what was happening. And there wasn't a lot of advance notice. I think that even the Leopold Center staff and people at Iowa State seemed very surprised by these cuts. And so leading up to the 17th, we just had a couple days, really, not even a week, to prepare to get people to attend the hearing on the morning of the 17th. And by that date, we had collected over 600 signatures on our petition in support of the Leopold Center, had put together a document that we had sent to all the legislators in the House and Senate, sharing some of the comments, some really heartfelt, emotional comments that people shared from that petition about how these cuts would influence their future careers, their time at Iowa State, the work that they're doing on their farms. So we had shared that with the legislators. And then working with Practical Farmers of Iowa, Iowa Farmers Union, Women, Food, and Ag Network, these groups were putting out action alerts to their bases as well. We got a good crew of farmers from across the state to speak at the hearing, and they were Republicans and Democrats both. It wasn't a partisan issue for them. They came to support the center. I spoke as a former student and as a researcher who benefited from the Leopold Center's work. There were staff from the center, faculty, and current students in the audience. It was overflowing the hearing chamber there at the Capitol. They had also put us with the proposed cuts to Planned Parenthood and to cuts in services for domestic violence survivors. So there was a lot of really heartfelt testimony in that room that day in those 2 hours, people advocating for this needed funding for these different issues in the state.
Would you like to comment on the legislators who were leading the fight for the cut, who were claiming, well, the Leopold Center has done good work, but it's over. It's finished. It's really no need to continue. Could you comment on that argument?
So there were some legislators who were very misinformed. I would say, actually, it's fair to say that they were lying to the public. They were trying to argue that the Leopold Center's work was done, that it was never supposed to be funded long-term through these funding mechanisms and the Groundwater Protection Act. But that's a lie. I ran into Paul Johnson, one of the authors of the Groundwater Protection Act, at the Capitol the morning of the hearing. He was on his way to meet with Governor Branstad. And I told him what some of these legislators had been saying to us. And, you know, he shook his head and said, you know, that wasn't true, that this was a bipartisan effort that they did in the late 80s. The governor supported it. Iowa Farm Bureau supported it. And by using this tax mechanism to fund the Leopold Center, the tax that farmers pay when they buy fertilizer, it was supposed to be that the Leopold Center would always have a steady stream of funding to support the next generation of scientists, support new and beginning farmers trying these conservation practices, to support, you know, veteran farmers in our state who have tried lots of things, right, and wanted to share their knowledge with others on their farms. And so it was not true that the Leopold Center funding was ever supposed to go away. That just was a lie. And that got repeated in the press. I went to a legislative forum in Boone County Saturday, April 15th, prior to the hearing on Monday, and spoke to some of the legislators who were on the Appropriations Committee for these cuts. And Senator Bain was there, Representative Bacon was there, and Bain, too, repeated this, that this funding was never supposed to be long-term. And I asked him if he had read the Groundwater Protection Act. He hadn't. He didn't seem to know any of the history for the funding of this center. So there was misinformation out there that the legislators were not correcting, and then they were repeating to the public. And that's really, really unfortunate. It's a revisionist history, what they were sharing. People looked to us as a model across the country. People were envious of this legislation. Researchers came to Iowa State. Students came to Iowa State because the center was there to do research there. I mean, I've talked to so many new and beginning farmers the past week in doing all of this advocacy for the center. Farmers who have said, you know, I wouldn't have been able to start this project or start this business, start this local food hub, had it not been for the Leopold Center. They have just done groundbreaking work, and it will always be needed. I mean, as long as we are doing agriculture in Iowa, we'll need to have a conversation about how to keep it sustainable and driven by community needs and to address community changes. That work will always be needed.
That was our very own Dr. Angie Carter explaining the quick response alumni and Iowa citizens marshaled against the cuts to the Leopold Center that came up unexpectedly a little over a week ago. I'd like to hear more about what she said to the legislature.
We have a recording of that, too.
Good morning. My name is Angie Carter. I'm here today from Davenport, Iowa. I'm the fourth generation of my family to graduate from Iowa State University and the seventh generation of my family to call Iowa home. I'm here for a very personal reason today. I oppose these cuts to the Leopold Center, and I oppose the redirection of the state tax paid when people pay to buy fertilizer to the Nutrient Management Center. This jeopardizes the work the center has done for decades in Iowa. This work is far from over. We need this work very much today. This continues to train the next generation of scientists and our new and beginning farmers in Iowa. For every dollar the Leopold Center spends on its research projects in our state, $4.60 is leveraged. The center is a hub that studies economic, ecological, and social health on our landscape. These three, as integrated pieces of social change on our landscape and as adoption of technology on our landscape, are very important for farmers and people living everywhere in Iowa. I would like to read from a letter my ISU alumni cohort and I wrote that was in the Des Moines Register yesterday online. Let us all remember Aldo Leopold, the center's namesake and Iowa's native son. He described Iowa not as a food factory, but as a living, working landscape in which farmers and citizens share in the abundance of its natural richness. The gift of fertile soils and fresh water can continue to shape the prosperity of the state. Yet seemingly overnight, a small group of politicians decided on the fate of a state-cherished, nationally recognized research center without consulting the farmers, without consulting the students, and without consulting the researchers who rely upon the center as a key partner. This partisan politicking denigrates the spirit of Leopold himself and makes the shared goal of safeguarding our landscape for this generation and future generations less possible by the day. This morning, I spoke with Paul Johnson as I came to the Capitol for this hearing. He spoke with several of us who are current students and alumni from Iowa State. He was on his way to meet with the governor to talk about these cuts. And he reminded us that the Iowa Farm Bureau originally supported the Groundwater Protection Act that funds this center. This is a nonpartisan center that is being put on the chopping block through partisan politicking. This makes our state look really awful, not just to our legislators and the constituents here in the state, but nationally as well, because the center is a nationally recognized research center for what it does. It is not replicated elsewhere on the Iowa State University campus. It is not replicated elsewhere in our state. It is not replicated elsewhere in our country. It doesn't cost our state anything because its funding is from the fertilizer tax, and so we're really confused how you came up so fast with these cuts. I would urge you today to fund the Leopold Center and to introduce an amendment to the budget bill. Thank you.
When Angie talked about the legislators who didn't know the history, I pulled out a program from our archives, which was made in honor of the 25th anniversary of the Leopold Center 5 years ago. In it, Doug Cooper, longtime farm reporter for WOI, interviews Dennis Keeney, first director of the Leopold Center, and Ralph Rosenberg, who was part of the bipartisan team that designed the Leopold Center to carry out the mission of the Groundwater Protection Act. Those who'd like to hear the full interview will be able to do so by listening to Heart of Iowa tomorrow, Thursday, which runs at noon and 7 p.m. But here's a brief clip from Ralph Rosenberg's remarks.
The Leopold Center is part of the 1987 Groundwater Protection Act. So to understand the history of the Leopold Center, I think people need to understand the history of the Groundwater Protection Act. And while it passed in 1987, it was really the product of several years of efforts. And it was a product of many legislators, Democrats and Republicans. It really was bipartisan, and its passage was due to it being bipartisan. In the early 80s, there was growing concerns over the threats to groundwater. There was studies being done. There was a Department of Natural Resources was doing some statewide water plan. The karst region in northeast Iowa was showing some of the migration of contaminants. And there was a growing concern about the threat to water. And so over a two-year period, we had multiple legislative committees meeting to figure out what's the best way to attack the threats to groundwater and to create a sustainable, financially sustainable, and politically sustainable proposal. And in addition to efforts to deal with landfills, underground storage tanks, household hazardous waste, there were the efforts to deal with the agriculture component. And part of the agriculture component was a realization that we needed a home for the research, demonstration, and education projects, and the Leopold Center is at home. The Leopold Center is a feather in the cap for sustainable agriculture and for people that want to farm and minimize the impact on our land and water. They really understand the Leopold ethic, land ethic. And I think there's even words in the bill about land ethic. And we think it's a feather in the cap for the state of Iowa and a feather in the cap for Iowa State University.
Could the legislature today eliminate funding for the Leopold Center?
I think the public supports the Leopold Center. I think if you took polls, the public loves it. Mm-hmm. One of the ways you know the public does is by the passage 2 years ago of the Iowa Water and Land Legacy. As much as I support the environment, I was surprised it was going to get 62%. 62% of Iowans said, we're willing to have 3/8% of a sales tax go to water and land. And that includes conservation programs. Some of that money would help end up helping our farmers and go out into the counties as well. So it's not only trails. So I think knowing that 62%, seeing Polk County tax itself by a 72% to 28% margin, and my understanding is other counties are going to look into what Polk County did with the money going back into preserving land, water quality, protecting lakes, streams, trails. I think the public's there.
Yep.
So I don't think the public would stand for any kind of backward movement. I think it's just how we're moving forward. I think that's the question today, how we're going to move forward to protect water quality. And then maybe other issues like this water quantity. Boy, I don't want to see a drought, but if we have another drought, we have to be ready for that.
This is KHOI Community Radio, and in the first half of our program, we heard from Mark Rasmussen, Angie Carter, and Ralph Rosenberg, various people involved in the past and present of the Leopold Center for Sustainable Agriculture. Whether the center is closed will depend on the decision of Governor Branstad, who signed the original bill creating the center.
On a lighter note, we have two big and very different events taking place this Saturday. In Washington, D.C., there will be the People's Climate March. But here in Iowa, there are no less than 7 sister marches. The closest for people in our listening area is in Iowa, the People's Climate Movement rally at the Iowa State Capitol at 1 o'clock this Saturday, April 29th. A broad coalition of groups is working to make this a statewide event involving thousands of concerned Iowans representing a broad range of perspectives.
And I would like to mention that there are actually 7 sister marches listed on the Internet. Maquoketa, Dubuque, Davenport, Cedar Rapids, Iowa City, and then the People's Climate March. But the most exciting thing that we are going to be talking about this morning is the Climate Justice Unity March from Little Tree Camp near Iowa City on Earth Day last Saturday, April 22nd, and continuing 85 miles to the People's Climate March in Des Moines this Saturday, April 29th. And this is being organized by Bold Iowa and with many other organizations that are also supporting it, particularly Indigenous. It's an organization which continues the fight against the Bakken Pipeline, officially known as the Dakota Access Pipeline, or DAPL. The group at Little Tree actually was part of the group that moved from Standing Rock. So it has a very strong Indigenous presence. And also, this march was organized by veteran march organizer Ed Fallon. A year ago, he marched across the country. His group was part of the big march in New York, the first Climate Action March. And he has a blog that relates this day by day what they're doing and where they're going on this march. And you can hear what he has to say on this station about that and many other issues every Wednesday at Fallon Forum at 4 p.m. Today he has a guest host because he's on the march. Since we're in the Fund Drive month, I'd like to give a special shout out to him and honor him, since he is one of our friends. We used to call them the 500 families, but we knew that that was getting to be a little too ambitious. But a friend is a someone who gives a sustaining membership of $20 a month or $240 a year. And the 500 families idea was that if we had 500 people who did that, they would really take care of our basic expenses. But this certainly is very, very important and inspiring. We'd like to have many other members like that, and we encourage you to be so inspired. If Ed can do this on his very limited budget, we hope that others will feel that they can too. And you become a friend the same way you become a member by calling 515-292-2878.
Okay, let's get back to the march. Even though it started last Saturday, you can follow along online or by joining for a day and coming out to one of the towns along the way to a potluck supper or a forum. Just get involved.
You can follow along with Ed's blog online at the Fallon Forum. We'll post it on our website, but you can find it just at Fallon Forum. And it has lots of pictures and a very interesting narrative of the day-to-day. But yesterday, I talked with Jessica Fears from Ames, who has this amazing story to tell us. Let's listen in.
Right now, I'm camped in Montezuma, Iowa. I think it's Diamond Trail. It's actually a really beautiful, beautiful park. I highly encourage everyone to come visit it if they get a chance. But we're going to be starting our march to Searsboro today. We're down in Powhatan County on the Climate Justice Unity March. We started out in Little Creek Camp, which it was incredible. I'd been there about a month or so before, and the camp's already grown, and they've got mulch trails and a great kitchen and everything going. So it's nice to see that expanding. And again, another place I would encourage people to visit, and especially if you're not familiar with the concept of the sustainable living, and it's a great educational place.
Now, could you talk a little about the origin of Little Creek Camp and its relation to Standing Rock?
So Little Creek Camp started after Standing Rock, and it's not fighting a pipeline kind of directly. You know, it's not in the path of anything, and it's on private land. But it's a place of prayer and relaxation and healing so that people who are fighting those battles have a place to come. And then, again, the sustainable living, they're just trying to teach people more about what you can do and what the little things you can change about the way you live that can make a big impact.
Are most of the people there indigenous, or is it how many people like you?
It's a blended group. A lot of people kind of come and go, too, from the camp. I don't live at the camp. I have a job. I live in Ames, and I come, though, when I have time. There's always projects to do.
Well, has you started on your march yesterday? Was there anything dramatic that happened yesterday?
So there was a video that was put out on the internet that was kind of a smear campaign about the march. It, you know, had these stories of eco-violence and that we were going to come trash these little towns. So a lot of people saw that and got concerned. They were worried, you know, that we were going to come tear up their town. While we were marching, we had people who were, you know, flipping us off. At night, there were people circling around, honking their horns, you know, kind of an intimidating situation, which I've never really experienced in Iowa. And as we marched into Deep River, there was a big lawn right next to the campground area, and it had a Jeep with two flagpoles on it. One had an American flag and one had a Confederate flag. You know, to me, that sends an immediate sign of, don't talk to these people. And it even puts a little bit of concern, again, for the safety of the people who are with us, the people of color. Later on that night, you know, we were camping and just singing around the campfire, sharing stories. After we went to sleep, we started hearing what sounded like gunshots or firecrackers. And it was a really scary situation. So one of the ladies with us did decide to phone the police and just let them know, hey, this is what we're experiencing out here. Nobody's come and threatened us directly, but we're just a little concerned. And the county sheriff went over and talked to them and told them, hey, you know, you are scaring them. And they put the Jeep away. Everything pretty much quieted down after that. the next morning, as we were getting up and we were packing to leave, I was over sitting in a van grabbing some stuff, and there was a guy in a golf cart driving over, and I recognized it was the guy who owned the Confederate flag Jeep. So I got nervous, thinking, oh no, what's he coming over here to say this morning? But all of a sudden, I heard people laughing, and I walked over, and he basically, you know, he said, I apologize. I realize now that what I saw and what I heard about you was wrong. And I'm sorry I scared you guys. So that I, you know, that was and that wasn't my intent. You know, it made a lot of us kind of tear up. So these small towns, most of them had actually originally welcomed us. We'd set up churches and various things like that that we could stay at all along the route. But when this video came out, we started getting phone calls and nasty letters and stuff saying, you can't stay here and we don't want you here. Like I said, I'm just so surprised because that's not the Iowa that I know. And the video did paint it as us not being Iowans, so I get that that's part of it. So the gentleman who had come over and apologized came and he sat and he talked to all of us. And then later that night, we had a forum in Montezuma here at the Diamond Trail Lake. He came out with his wife. He said he'd tried to get his friends to come out, but they had refused. And I said, well, you know, I think that says a lot more about you than them, you know. And then as we were walking into Montezuma, they'd come across a lady who was painting her house, and she hadn't seen the video or anything, but she invited us to sit on her lawn and stay on her porch and everything. And then she went inside and brought out refreshments for everybody, let us use her Wi-Fi. It was incredibly sweet. So later that night when we had the forum with everybody and we had the gentleman who had the Confederate flags out earlier that day, he and his wife were there. While they were here, there were people circling around the area we were camping in. And some of them would yell things. Some of them were just filming things. And some of them were being pretty nasty. And they said, wow, is this what you've been dealing with? I feel awful. And one of the Native women spoke up and said, this is what I deal with all the time. And you could just kind of tell that they had a new understanding. You know, I mean, I guess for me, that's what the whole reason I'm walking 85 miles, to see it happen so quickly. Even just one person, he came out and he told me that in 1990, they could pretty much drink directly from their well. In 1991, they had to go to rural water. It was that quick, and it was nitrate. And we were able to build that connection.
You're listening to Local Talk here on KHOI 89.1 FM, Story City and the surrounding area. I'm Rebecca Reuter. I'm the engineer for now. Susan Franson had to step out for a second. But here on KHOI, we have a lot of great programming, and Local Talk is just one of them. And I just love the information. I love engineering every Wednesday. I used to engineer quite often, didn't I?
Yes, and we're so glad to have you back.
Of course. And it's every time I came in here, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, there's always someone fascinating, some new thing going on.
I have a phone call from our guest that's supposed to be here right now, and I'll just take that outside.
Sure,
Regina,
thanks,
talk
Susan.
To you for a little bit.
I just wanted to remind everybody we are doing our fundraising week. KHOI makes an important contribution to our community. Like we were discussing, bringing a lot of interesting folks and issues to the awareness of our local community. Local services like these make our area a great place to love. And if you're ever interested in becoming involved in our radio station, just come on down. We're always looking for volunteers, and you can learn a lot about developing new programs.
And where is that at? Where are we at, Gina?
We're down here, downtown, right on
410 Douglas.
Douglas.
It's the old Ames Pantorum. You can't miss it. There's a big old sign. But don't bring your laundry because we're not actual Pantorum anymore.
And we're always encouraging new folks to become members and contribute to help pay for our local radio, KHOI. Your contribution really counts here, and together we keep this media resource alive for all of us to share and enjoy. So here's how you can call at 515-292-2878. That's 515-292-2878. Or you can donate online at khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org. And use the secure donate button at khoifm.org. Or you can also just bring a check down to our office here on Douglas.
Or you can text the donation amount. We got that new swanky technology these days. All you need is a smartphone and your credit card. And you just text any amount you wish to donate to 515-200-7758. It is safe, easy as well. It's pretty great.
Yeah, technology is pretty great. You could hear my cell phone, and that was our guest, who I thought was going to be in the studio. She is unable to come down, but I said, we could phone you, and she said, yes, you can just phone me. And so I'll give you her number, and there it is. And that was going to be a sub-theme for me, is how technology enables you to do something, to do old things better. I mean, radio has been around, you know, for certainly
100 years.
Almost 100 years, and the some of the rules are made with the assumptions that came from the original limitations of the radio signals, and yet the fact that we have a radio signal and have the technology to go with it means that we have possibilities that we couldn't possibly have had 10 years ago even. And one of these is that we can have a program where we have somebody we talked to yesterday, as we have recorded, and we can have guests on the phone, which we do all the time. And right now, do we have Simone on the phone?
We do have Simone on the phone. Here she is.
And it's a pleasure to welcome you, Simone. And you are the organizer of Livestream Blessed and Blended Conference that's going to take place this weekend. Is that right?
Yes, ma'am. It's part of a team with Body of Christ Church. Yes, ma'am.
And this will be a very interesting technological event, I think. A great way to bring people together on something very personal, blended families, and very personal also, the faith that you have in Body of Christ Church, and share this with the community. And would you tell what is a live stream conference?
Well, the conference is actually happening in Arkansas, and it will be streamed simultaneously to various sites around the country. And this is their first year doing this, and this they did it to combat the top two excuses why people are unable to make the conference, which is time and money. So it's totally free, and it's simulcasted everywhere, so you can do it in your home church, you can do it in your home, you can do it on your phone or your computer. And Body of Christ Church decided to host it at our church.
Now, why did you decide to do that? How did you find out about it?
Well, me personally, my husband abandoned myself and our children a little over a year ago, and I am divorced now, but I knew then that I wanted to be remarried. I was not having any more children, and that I would be the best stepmother ever. So I got involved with Family Life, and they have a blended leg. And I'm familiar with their books, the Smart Step Family, the Smart Stepmother, the Smart Stepfather. And I saw that they were putting on this conference. And Ron Deal has a wealth of knowledge. He's been working with blended families for decades, and it's just a blessing to be able to have him and other nationally known speakers for free, you know.
Now, one of the things about a live stream conference is once you've registered, you don't have to be in a location with other people. For example, if your children are, I mean, your children are such ages that you can't get out, you still could catch parts of the conference. Isn't that right?
Yes, ma'am, you can. You can either come join us at Body of Christ Church, or you can actually live stream it from your phone or your computer. You can actually purchase it. If you want that material, you can purchase that for, you can have access to it for a year. It's a lot of different options. They're trying to make the information readily accessible to the families that need it. Because with step families and with second and subsequent marriages, they have a higher divorce rate than first marriages. So first marriage is like 50%, but then second and subsequent marriages is like 3 out of 4 end in divorce. We want to help equip these families so they can be successful.
And now this is a real service to the community. You people can come for all day, and but they have to register. Isn't that right?
Yes, ma'am. It would be great if they did. If they don't register, they definitely can come. But we would prefer that they go to the website and register.
Since this is an all-day conference, I think they are going to be having, you're going to have lunch and even a little breakfast or a little, some rolls and coffee and so forth. Is that right?
Yes, ma'am. We will have some breakfast pastries and juice and coffee for breakfast. And we have lunch from Panera, and we'll have snacks at the different breaks.
And, of course, one of the great advantages of a conference is the other people. And the speakers are important, but the other people that you get to know in your community, whether it's a physical community like Ames or whether it's a community like a church conference or a scientific conference or any other kind of conference is the people. And that's what you are providing as well as the food, right?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. So it'll be a number of couples there as well as some members of our ministry leadership team there to help, you know, answer questions or facilitate discussions. We do have a list of events and how the day will go that we'll give to each participant when they come to the church, so they'll know how the day will flow. And people do have the freedom to come and go as their schedule allows. But the conference will be from 8:30 to 4:30.
Yes, 8:30 to 4:30 at the Body of Christ Church, 114 5th Street in Ames. That's just around the corner from KHOI. So you're our neighbors.
Yes, ma'am.
And I do have one more question. Will there be childcare?
No childcare provided, no, ma'am.
Okay, so people need to be aware of that.
Can they register by calling you, Simone?
I would prefer that they go to the website.
Okay.
blendedandblessed.com.
blendedandblessed.com.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, and we'll have that website along with the Body of Christ Church website.
You can go to our Body of Christ website, which is the number one, and then one spelled out, O-N-E, .org, everyone.org, and you'll find a link to the Blended and Blessed Conference, and you can register that way as well.
Well, thank you so much. I hope a lot of people. I talked to somebody who had seen one of your signs, one of your posters. So people are. I hope you have a lot of variety of people coming to your conference.
I hope so as well. Thank you.
Well, thanks for being with us this morning. You've been listening to Local Talk on Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. We've been your hosts, Susan Franzen and Gina McAndrews. Voices you heard were Mark Rasmussen, Angie Carter, Ralph Rosenberg, Doug Cooper, Jessica Fears, and Simone York.
Local Talk will be rebroadcast at noon and 7 p.m. today. You can listen to today's Local Talk show and any of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org. There you will also find information about our guests, along with relevant links to today's stories. That's KHOIFM.org. And you can like us on Facebook and get updates of all our show postings in your news feed.
Local Talk was engineered by Rebecca Reuter. Our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley.
Local Talk is a radio production, training, workshop, as well as a show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878. That's 292-2878. Or contact us through our website, khoifm.org.
If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible. Thanks for listening and
see you again on the radio.
KHOI is funded in part by the Ames Chamber of Commerce. Find job opportunities throughout Ames and Story County at workinames.com. Again, that's workinames.com.